This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Richard Goldberg from the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He worked on Capitol Hill for many years and worked especially on the national security with regard to the threat of the suspect nuclear weapons program at Iran. And that's what we're addressing right now, because Richard guides me in an article at FTD to have a new understanding of what happens the day after the JCPOA of 2015 is restored, which is now the ambition of the Biden administration. Well announced, nothing secretive, working to restore the JCPOA. What happens then? Do we sit back and watch Iran go back underground and develop nuclear weapons? Do we watch Iran bad acting in its own neighborhood, projecting power around the world, linking with terrorist organizations? Or, Richard, a very good evening to you. The day after the JCPOA, we now have an Iran that is empowered to defeat any inspection protocol that launched by the IAEA with all good intentions. We can see that Iran knows how to defeat that. But you point to 31 states of the Union now having laws on their books in conversation about Iran that can be updated to do what? Good evening to you, Richard.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me. I think the day after the Biden administration goes back into the Iran nuclear deal, you're going to see sort of this neutrality within the private sector, an uncertainty. Should we go back in? Should we renew the deals we had prior to President Trump leaving the deal? What contracts can we sign? We have all these Republicans in Congress pledging to restore sanctions the minute a Republican president is elected. We don't want to see the same whiplash we had in 2018 when Trump pulled out of the deal. So already there will be some sort of a chilling effect on any long-term contracts. But what about all these sectors and commodities that have short-term contract capabilities, the oil sector, the petrochemical sector, metals, construction, manufacturing? These are areas where we may see a flood of investment and or contracts come into Iran. And in the Congress, we're going to see Republicans fighting. We've already seen a signal that Republican leadership believes any attempt to restore the deal should be submitted to Congress for a vote. There will be sanctions bills put forward by Republicans that Democrats don't allow to go forward. Ultimately, we'll see how the midterm election goes. But for now, being in the minority, it's an uphill battle for Republicans to try to fight back. That leaves the states and local governments around the country with something they can do in the interim. As you pointed out, 31 states around the country have previously adopted some form of an Iran sanctions legislation in their states. Most of those are very narrowly tailored so that if you have a company that invests about $20 million in Iran's energy sector, those state pension funds cannot invest in that company, and they have to notify their fund managers to divest as well. That's a very outdated way of thinking about Iran sanctions. 20, 30 years ago, that's what sanctions on Iran looked like. Today, we have sanctions on multiple sectors of Iran's economy, the entirety of its financial industry, the entirety of its construction, manufacturing, metals, mining, the list goes on, shipping, engineering. We should ask states to update their sanctions, to update their divestment bills across the country and say, we don't want our pensions invested in any company that is doing business in any of these sectors of Iran's economy, including its financial sector. If it does business with an Iranian bank, we don't want to have it invested from our taxpayer pensions. And so I think that would send an immediate signal to the market that you will still pay a price, even for a short-term contract. And while we won't have federal sanctions in place, at least for now, we may actually have the states, due to our system of federalism, step in and have something just as strong to chill the market.
You give two examples of previous activity that is similar to this. Save Darfur many years ago, or first decade of this century, and the BDS movement from 2015. Have those been successful? Is that a model that states can follow?
The Save Darfur movement actually started the idea of having states divest their pension funds from companies that were invested in Sudan's energy sector many years ago. And it did have an impact, especially on U.S. firms that were operating there. The Iran sanctions divestment push followed, and again, had some effect on some multinational companies that did not want the reputational impact of being associated with the Iranian market. But we have absolutely seen concretely the power of these divestment bills from states that have passed anti-BDS laws. That's the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement that targets Israel. About a dozen states have laws on the books, starting in 2015 with the state of Illinois, not traditionally one that would come to mind. Illinois led the nation in this idea to divest its pensions from any company that participates in a boycott of Israel. And it's a very expansive definition and covers any kind of economic sort of action taken towards the state of Israel or territories controlled by Israel. And we have seen companies that thought they were not going to get caught, that thought they were just doing something to protest what they viewed as something happening in the Palestinian territories. And in fact, that triggered these anti-BDS laws. Airbnb, we recall just a couple of years ago, said they were going to stop listings for Jewish homes in the West Bank. A big uproar. Well, the state of Illinois, the state of Florida, the state of New Jersey sent a letter to Airbnb saying, hey, you're in violation of our state anti-BDS law, and you're about to go to market for an IPO. We're going to blacklist you. A few days later, Airbnb said, okay, hey, we're reversing course. We've decided not to cancel these listings. So the states have a lot of power, a lot of economic influence, and there's a reputational, legal, and financial cost for companies that ignore them.
You'll have to help me with this part, Richard, because you tell me that state regulators can weigh in here because foreign banks must register with them when they come to Florida or California. Have I said that correctly, and what can state regulators do?
That's right. Most states, if not all states, have charter regulations for banks to operate in a state. But on top of that, there's also requirements for foreign banks that want to have representation offices or agents registered in the state to operate and do business. They also have to apply separately to whoever the regulator is of the banking sector in each state. And you can go online, just type in Florida banking foreign representation. You'll see all the forms and all the certifications that are required of a foreign bank. You'll see all the different foreign banks. You'll recognize some of the names, some of the French, Italian, UK banks. And, you know, if we essentially say we're going to add a certification requirement, that on top of all the other forms you have to fill out to open your office, you're also going to have to say, hey, I don't do business with Iran. I don't do business with the Iranian financial sector, which is declared by the U.S. Treasury Department and the financial crimes investigators as a hub for money laundering and terror finance. Then add that certification, and you'll see foreign banks around the world not restart their connections with Iranian banks.
You mentioned Illinois and Florida. Those are very big states with a lot of firepower. Are they enough if you started with two big states like that in this, or do you need numbers? There are 50 states of the union. Do you need a majority to make an effect, Richard?
Listen, I think we have 31 states today that have a law in place on Iran. If you work down that list, you may have to start with those that have Republican governors or Republican legislatures for now if this becomes a partisan issue. But we talk about a state like Illinois, which has long been a blue state and has acted as a leader in many of these issues. It is possible as you work your way down, the red states will start, the purple states will follow, and maybe you'll even get some of the blue states as well. But in the anti-BDS realm, you don't have 31 states with these laws. You have 12. And the cumulative firing power of those pension systems alone is massive. If you could get 20 of the 31 states that have Iran laws to expand their divestment laws to all these different sectors of Iran's economy, to add some financial regulation requirements as well, that's pretty powerful.
At Vienna, we have 30 seconds. Is this a concern by Iran, and is this something that the Biden administration is thinking about?
it's likely not come up in the conversations until this article that we just published. But I will say it was something that was on Iran's mind back in 2015. There are provisions in the JCPOA, in the Iran deal, that specifically require the executive branch of the federal government to take action to try to stymie these laws in the states. So the Iranians definitely think about it.
Okay.
Whether the Biden administration thought this might be a problem, not so sure.
Richard Goldberg, senior advisor at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.